inside, bored, nothing to do but pretend to marry your cat, go on a honeymoon, have a fight, have a falling out, go to pretend marriage counseling and divorce your cat. Well, now you have another thing to do, listening to our pubescent voices. We're well-versed in social isolation. Welcome to 6 Feet Apart, the podcast where we are actually 6 miles apart. I'm your host, Ian, here with Marcos.
Yo!
Luke.
Hola.
And Nate.
Ahoy, matey.
How are you guys doing today?
Doing great, Marcos. How are you?
I'm tired.
Yeah, that's the spirit.
I don't know. The weather's not as nice as the last couple of days. It's going to rain. I mean, which is good in its own way. But
I guess we'll just start this off with a hobby update. So how have you guys been with keeping up with your hobbies, I guess?
I quit Minecraft.
Whoa.
I've stopped playing it, too. It got really boring.
I feel like it's unhealthy.
Because we didn't join you.
Yeah. You guys kind of bailed on us.
We didn't bail on you.
No. You're fine, Luke. Nate, you had lots of promises unkept.
Don't make me cry, Ian.
I never said I was going to join in the first place, so.
That's true.
He's really just talking to me, everyone.
essentially, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, Ian, what are you doing with your time then? If you're off of Minecraft?
The other day, I got so bored that I took a magnifying glass outside when it was really sunny and started burning stuff.
Like living things?
Like dead leaves and stuff. I tried an ant, but the ant ran away. And then I realized how sadistic that was, and I was like, find me more ants.
Let it be on the record.
Yep.
Ian is an ant burner.
I am, yeah. Remember that time, Luke, where we made eggs and we had all those extra onions?
Yes. Are they still there?
Yeah. So I threw it at the side of my house and it's still there. And I tried burning one, and now I burnt it over pavement, and now the pavement is like powdery with like this yellow powder. And I'm guessing that's how onion powder is made. But
I'm not sure. Why?
Good question.
Why did you throw it against your house in the first place again?
Because I didn't want to throw it away. That was wasteful.
Ian just accumulates trash just to like, he's like, you know what? I can't, it's never, there's no point throwing it away. I'll just keep it in my backyard.
Yeah. Throw it at the brick wall and then I don't know. It's giving us some use.
Well, have you done anything else, Ian, or is it anything?
I started using my telescope
mm-hmm.
to watch my neighbors from my back.
Oh my god.
To be clear, they're like doing yard work and stuff, so I'm not like watching them through their living room window or anything. So I'd be able
we'll
to
take your word for it.
Yeah, it's not creepy. Unless you make it
No, it's kind of creepy.
I legit just wanted to test out like how well the telescope worked. I also used it on like birds and squirrels and stuff. So it's not like it's, you know, it's, yeah, okay.
No, I support this. I want to see birds.
Yeah, thank you, Nate. I need that.
Luke, what about you?
What have I been up to? Well, Marcos has so graciously gifted me this book that both you and him have read. I'm very excited to read it.
Yes.
Yes, you should be.
It's one of my favorite books.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I'm very excited to read it then. I've been keeping up with language stuff. Like Ian said, Minecraft got really boring. And I've been exercising quite a bit, though, so that's good. But I don't know, like, how much I'm dedicated to it, so we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Nate, what about you?
Well, I've been doing a lot of reading, but I'm still pursuing my photography stuff, a portrait of my neighborhood. Sort of interesting, the other day, there was, like, a music just started coming from in the middle of my neighborhood, and so I took a walk with my camera, and there was, like, this concert, and it's this just guitarist and singing, and then all of these children and little kids and families everywhere just like in little circles many feet away from the artist. It was the most absurd concert I've ever seen, but I don't know, it's sort of, you get a it's interesting that I chose this time to start taking photos while there's this mixture of things being so empty and yet so many more people outside and things like that.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's about it. Reading a lot, thinking a lot, enjoying the birds.
Yeah. I'm also reading. I know Nate and I are reading the second book to the book that Luke's reading.
Do you maybe want
to explain what it is, Marcos?
Oh, so it's the first book is The Traitor Baru Cormorant. The second book is The Monster Baru Cormorant. And it's about, it's a fantasy book about like economics and leadership and subterfuge and a bunch of really cool things. So, yeah. But I've also picked up cooking, but I'll let you know, or like, well, if you ask anyone in my family, they will tell you I'm a terrible cook. So
I felt that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've cooked three things so far. The first two went absolutely well. The first one was pretty good, actually. Second one was terrible. Third one is probably my best one yet.
What were they? What'd you cook?
So first one, I started out simple. I just made like a vanilla steamer, which was, that one was pretty good. I still make those almost on a daily basis and drink them. And then the second one, I don't know what it was called. It was like this weird, like ice cream, like thing. I don't know. It turned out to be really bad. The third one was this cool, like cake thing where it was, I don't remember what it was called, but it's like it used graham crackers, strawberries, and whipped cream to make this like cool little like layered cake. However, I ran out of whipped cream, so I had to make like half as much as I originally intended. So, but it still turned out great. And then I've also been doing a lot of electric skateboarding. First of all, there are some people. I saw three other electric skateboards the other day.
Interesting.
All on Riverside. Yeah, I know. All of them had better ones than me, but I was going faster than all of them. So,
who's the real winner here?
Me, because I was the first one.
Exactly.
Yes, I am the OG. They cannot take that away from me.
And that stands for original skateboarder.
Yeah, and then I've also been exercising, kind of like Luke. Oh, and then I made a card game. Well, I'm still making it. And I made a secret code that I have been communicating in with Nate.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. And both the card game and the code is based off of the book we're reading. So, Luke, as soon as you finish the first book and get like halfway through the second book, we can have maybe an episode about it, and it'll be pretty interesting.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Yeah, you just need to hurry up and read it.
And I'll just be sitting there during the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to be quiet. You're not going to say anything that time.
You're just sit in the corner and just listen in.
You still have to be there, but, you know.
You're still going to make me edit it. You're still going to make me go through the trouble of editing it. Okay, so I'm the editor for this.
I'm glad you understand.
I'm the editor, so I'm going to be putting random noises right now. Just like the worst noises you'll ever hear. I'm just going to put them right now.
Yes. Are you going to finish that croissant?
Thank you, man.
Wait, are you gonna like find them online, or are you gonna like make them yourself?
We'll see. I don't know.
He just screams into the microphone. Yeah. He just screams. He's like, oh my gosh.
What are the topics for today that we'd like to discuss?
Should I go into this?
Yeah.
No.
Let's go into it.
No.
Ian.
I'll be quiet. I'm sorry.
So our talk today, in addition to our usual coronavirus news about the pandemic, our topic today will also be about that. We wanted to discuss sort of the ethics of the decisions that people have to make while we're going through this, whether that's medical professionals or government officials, because I feel like during times like these, during disasters, it's when our values as people in the society must come out, because, well, people's lives are on the line and decisions decide who live and who dies. So I guess we can just jump in.
Yeah.
So we have three ethical situations, three decisions that people are having to make today. And so we'll start with a sort of easy one. And that would be clinical trials, because now is the time when there isn't a cure, there isn't a vaccine, but there are possible drugs that could have an impact on people's lives. And generally, there's regulation and medical best practices which prevent people from just, you know, like giving out pill bottles and saying this will might help you. And yet a lot of what we're seeing now is us inching closer to that, because people want to give hope and want to give the idea that there is a possible way you can get out. I don't know. What do we think about that risk?
I don't know. It's interesting, because it's essentially saying, like, because I don't know if you're kind of hinting at this as well, but is it the same as kind of going through and giving people different medicines to see which ones work?
Right. I mean,
because
there are many new clinical trials starting. So most of the time each trial is focused on one drug. So they give a certain number of patients this drug, a certain number of patients a placebo or no drug, and they then compare the outcome. And there are different types right now. So there's like prevention. So you give a drug and you see how it impacts as someone gets the disease, or they already have it. Now, does it help relieve symptoms, end it faster, or things like that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, because like I feel like some of it might make it worse, you know, because we don't really have enough information yet to see what helps and what doesn't. And if you make it worse, then you could be putting that patient's life at risk.
Right. So what's our moral dilemma here? So we're talking about, like, are these volunteers, Nate, that, like, are, yeah, like, so going up for these drugs?
Everyone's a volunteer, but it's more a matter of there are rules and guidelines in place to ensure that people aren't unnecessarily put at risk. But regulation bodies like the FDA and stuff like that are loosening these up so that clinical trials can begin and be executed faster.
Let's say, yeah, that it does open up the door for, you know, like things to be pushed through a lot easier. Like, I guess a lot of people could like argue, be like, well, they're giving their consent to go through with these trials, then, you know, like, what's the issue with it? As long as, you know, like, if they've made the decision to be able to receive either the drug or a placebo and see if the drug even works, you know, like, what's the dilemma there?
Well, I think, like, it also depends on, like, what, if they are giving their consent, what are the situations in which they're giving said consent? Like,
yeah,
like, how much information are they getting?
It always depends on how it's marketed to them as well. Whether, yeah, it, you know, the clinic is marketing the drug as something that, you know, has a very high chance to cure you, or it's just like, we don't know. Like, we're trying to figure this out. You know, we have no idea if this will cure you. And a lot of the things, like back in the 80s, you know, whenever the AIDS crisis was developing and, you know, we didn't have any research on it, a lot of clinics gave out, you know, drugs that, you know, a lot of these drugs that were used for AIDS didn't work, but regardless, you know, you'd either be receiving the drug or a placebo, and, you know, clinics kind of marketed it as like, they kind of hid the fact that what you could be receiving was sugar pills. So I think it's all in like how you explain it to them.
And this is a new disease. So there's a certain like understanding people have when they're going into clinical trials with understood and studied diseases.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of, we don't even know the death rate for this. So yeah. how can someone make a proper decision on whether they want to risk taking a possibly dangerous drug when they don't even know what their chances of dying?
There's a lot of room for error here with these trials.
But of course, if these do in the end accelerate our ability to get new drugs to the wider public, aren't there going to be so many more people saved in that?
Well, there's two ways you can look at this, and that's either like the legality of it, right? Of you know, like putting forward these trials, if you know, how does, you know, this individual feel they've been represented by the clinic? You know, have their rights been accurately represented? Is it being marketed to them in a more like a targeted way at all? Or a morality standpoint, which is like, well, you know, it's probably going to benefit the greater good in the end, or at least we hope so. And that's what we're trying to do. So we're just going to go through with it. Right. Like that's.
Yeah. From the legal perspective, it's sort of just on a side note, unrelated to the ethical situation.
Yeah.
It's funny that in times like these, we realize how much of what we consider like law and how the world works isn't directly legislated.
Yeah.
It's all executive agencies that basically Congress just says, we are appointing this body and they can make regulations to do this. And so then the FDA has wide range to just stop doing that. Or the EPA right now is able to basically say, we're not going to enforce any of the environmental protection laws. And they have the right to do that because it's not legislated that they can't just stop. Anyway, let's move on to the second situation. So this one is a more sort of drastic, we decide who lives or dies directly one, and it's who gets the respirator. As medical resources are taken up because we haven't flattened that curve enough, medical professionals have to decide, literally, do I give this medicine or this respirator to person A or person B? And a lot of like the discussion that's happening is whether elderly people are less worthy of receiving a respirator because they've lived longer, they've had a chance to sort of live, especially when compared to young people. So what do we think? How do we decide?
I don't know, because isn't it more likely for an older person to die from this?
Yeah.
So then I feel like the elderly should get it because they're more likely to die.
Well, let's say you have two people in the same condition. Right. Right.
So a lot of what, I mean, when you've gotten to the point where someone needs a respirator, they're going down the bad path. So it's,
yeah. Well, let's say you like a younger person is probably going to have a better chance of fighting it off. Right. They usually have stronger immune systems and they usually can handle more. Let's say that at that point, this individual needs a respirator. If they don't receive one, it's probably going to be like a life or death scenario, because once you're at that point, it's really hard to go back without receiving like extended medical help. So do you give it to the elderly person or the younger person who is more likely to probably come out of it with the help of a respirator? You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because it's not a guaranteed chance that if you receive a respirator or extended medical help that you're going to survive it. Like, right. It's never guaranteed.
Yeah.
But you have a much better chance, right?
Yeah.
So instead consider in all of these situations that the person is in the same condition and that as far as we know, they have equal chances of living or dying. Mm-hmm. Because although older people are more likely, as time goes on, the numbers continue to show a shift that young people are more likely to die. So I think that, at least for the situation, how do we determine, is there more value in a young person because of their potential? Or, I don't know, in some ways I feel like it should just be a lottery system completely by chance who gets a respirator or not with limited resources.
Yeah. However, depending on what type of lottery system.
Let's say you can't do that. Let's say you have to make a decision and it can't be random.
Well, I mean, okay. But that limits, I mean, part of the thing about randomness is that, I mean, that's a separate decision, but it's a way of making the decision anyway.
It's fair. Yeah. It's the most fair option.
Because part of this is when you say no chance, you have to decide A or B, then you're completely ignoring the issue of whether it's all right in any situation to make the decision based on other factors.
You could probably justify it, I think.
Yeah, but also with the if you do a lottery system, I guess, like, depending on what type of lottery system you're doing, those with more money have can increase their chances of getting it. Because, like, obviously there are, like, there's the lottery where the more tickets you buy, the more likely you are to get it, to win.
Oh, yeah.
This is more like, we have 10 patients in the hospital. We have 2 respirators right now. We're just going to
draw
two names
out of a hat.
It's not really like you can buy more. I mean, I understand there definitely is like room for like abuse within the medical system from, you know, like
corruption
from wealth. Yeah. There's corruption everywhere, especially in the medical field, but that doesn't, but we're for the sake of this argument, we're just saying like, it's like a fair chance.
Okay, just because I don't have a straight answer for this. Mm-hmm. This kind of goes off of like this reminds me of a thing from the book we were reading, Nate, where if, say, one of the patients does die because they didn't get the respirator, who's like to fault for that death, right? Because in the book we're reading, there's like one of the little things is like, oh, if you kill somebody, is it the arm that stabbed them,
or the mind,
like at fault, or is it the mind because they controlled the arm, or is it, or but the mind was doing it in service of the throne, so is it the throne at fault? So it's like who's the bad guy here, you know?
Yeah.
So in this scenario, it would be,
does there have to be a bad guy?
Yeah, I mean, in this scenario, I feel like it'd be like you can't blame the doctor because. Unless, of course, he had some obvious bias, or they had some obvious bias, but you can't blame the doctor because they were just trying to save somebody. But then, do you blame the people who make the respirators because they didn't make enough respirators, or
the hospital for not buying enough?
Do you blame the hospital for not buying enough?
Yeah, we were gonna talk about this at the very end, but this is a perfect segue to like, at the end, who can we blame overall for the pandemic? And putting us in these situations, and is this the third? No, question? there's another one. This is more of a overall. I don't know. Like, there was a 2019 federal simulation, and I think I've talked with you all about this in the car, but where the federal government literally went through a situation which is remarkably similar to this one, a respiratory disease coming out of China that starts to spread. And every one of those agencies that had to, like, you know, send out what they were doing and everything, go through this, were given feedback, and public officials were made aware of things that we are lacking, all of this. And the Trump administration did absolutely nothing to really address the core issues that were at the base of this. So are they to blame, or is it the medical professionals that were involved for not continuing to push harder to encourage them to do that? Or is it, we could even argue it's the public's fault. It's all of our fault for not ensuring that our public officials.
I don't think it's one individual's fault. I think a lot of people are to blame just for, I don't know. It's hard to like put blame on like a sole individual or sole like entity. You know?
Actually the animal in Wuhan. It's the bats.
Well, you know, he didn't have to, you know, come into contact with a market, the open air markets, you know, like, is that, I mean, it could be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's,
we'll keep that in mind.
You can also, you can also look at that from like a somewhat religious perspective of saying like, do we have the right to blame people?
Yeah. I mean, isn't this a natural, it's just a virus.
Like who are we to be the one judging people for their inaction or their failure to act upon, or that, or so like essentially, like, you know, Luke, I think you talked about this scene the other day But you know the scene from Schindler's List at the end?
Yes.
Where, like, at the end, he's like, he picks up, like, I forget what it was, but he picks up something and he's like,
it's his man, little, this is a life. His little pen that he has on his chest.
Yeah, he's like, this is a life, yeah, I could have saved.
Such a good
movie. Yeah, so, like, I guess we're in that kind of situation where it's like, what are we doing? Like, what? How could we blame somebody when we're the ones sitting here not really doing anything? Sure, like, being in quarantine could save people.
Well, like, it's the thing is, it's not my. I don't work at the CDC. You know, I don't work for. I'm not a government worker who's in charge of ensuring that, like, a virus outbreak doesn't happen. You know, like, I work. Like, we each have a role. I mean, you could look at it like we each have a role in society or something like that. But basically, right, like, it's I don't know, it wasn't my job to ensure that a virus. I mean, you could argue that it was.
Yeah, I would say that. But I kind of, in a way, really do believe that all of us have failed in our duty to not ensure that we choose the proper government officials and keep them accountable. Isn't that the most, like, basic duty that a person in a democracy has?
But you could argue, like, someone is more responsible for, like, than another individual. So you can have, like, a village, and you could have, like, a person that's responsible for, like, maintaining the food in the village and, like, keeping it safe, right? And then you could have the rest of the village, you know, and let's say, like, a wolf or an animal gets in at night and destroys all the crops and destroys all the food. Like, who do you blame? I mean, obviously, your biggest response is to be like, well, it was the person that didn't, you know, like, do their job and guard the food. And then you could argue, be like, well, everyone else should have been looking out and, like, doing it. But at the same time, it's like, you were given that responsibility. Yeah. Like, that is your sole purpose at, like, you know, in this village. That's your role. Everyone else has been keeping up with their role. You know, why is it my job to manage yours for you?
I guess, in a way, an easier decision to make is to say, did they really attempt anything in their role? Like, if that person did put up fences and, you know, do all this to keep out the animals, then at least they tried.
Like, there's nothing. Right? Yeah, but there's nothing we could have done.
We look at our current government and the real situation, and they just ignored it. That happens in every single area, and that's part of the frustration, I'm sure, of public health officials, is that they constantly make recommendations and no one listens.
Yes. Well, wasn't it that those individuals that were prepped on that that simulation, what was it, like 2017, 2016? They, like, were fired, no, like, so, very soon after, or, like, left the administration?
The simulation was in 2019, completely during the Trump administration, and those officials were still, I mean, it was like every major federal agency was involved. That's another problem that you kind of can blame him for. After the Obama, or while the Obama administration was training Trump administration officials to basically take over the government, they had many high-ranking officials go through, like, some briefings and some, you know, different training and everything, so that in the event of a pandemic, they knew sort of what to do. And every single one of those major officials was later either resigned or was forced to resign by Trump, leaving no one with the original Obama administration training on a high level. So nevertheless, the 2019 simulation did still happen, and public health officials still made reports which basically pointed to weaknesses in every area of our possible response. So I don't know. But back to our respirator problem, and then we can quickly go to our third thing. I just feel like once you start making decisions, like, an elderly person has had the chance to live longer, and so, you know, the young person should be given that chance. I feel like that's a slippery slope to go towards.
It's a very slippery slope, yes.
Towards things like, oh, this person has more influence in whatever area of society, and they have the capacity for more impact and thus are more important. So you know, plain utilitarianism says that each person has sort of an equal, I don't know how to say that, each interest of a human being is equal. But then the altruism, you know, is more different people can be valued in different ways. So, I don't know, once we talk about money, power.
Like a utilitarian standpoint of like, well, this individual is probably going to benefit as a society like longer because they are able to work harder and like live longer and contribute more overall.
Yeah, so, I mean, but on the short scale, utilitarianism would say the elderly valuable as the young person. And so you get into like subsets of utilitarianism once you start to say, oh, but this person is actually more valuable because they can do more for everyone else.
I think there's another problem where, like, say one person comes into the hospital and they give them the last respirator, and then the next day another person walks in with like the same condition. Well, now you just essentially killed that second person because you gave the last respirator to the first person.
You didn't necessarily kill them. It was like,
I know, but you put them at risk of death.
But they didn't come first.
I know. And so essentially as the public, do we, as soon as like the first sign, like I know we've been warned to stop going to the hospital as much, especially if we don't have any major symptoms, but at the first sign of a symptom, do we just immediately go there there's a higher risk of saving our own lives?
I think, Marcos, are you saying like, I don't know, we haven't considered in differing conditions. If you give a person with moderate symptoms a respirator and then someone comes into the hospital with severe symptoms and they're more likely to die, is it right to take the ventilator from someone or the respirator?
A lot of hospitals will do that. A lot of hospitals like are prioritizing, you know, stuff like that. But at the same time, I mean, like, is it right to do that?
But what if they're in the same condition?
I would give the person that came first.
Okay, so then you're essentially punishing the second person.
I'm not punishing them. I don't think it's. I didn't give them COVID-19. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I know, this person came here first, you know.
Marcos, the alternative, which would be to say, oh no, I'm not giving you this machine because someone could come later, is worse. Yeah. I say, because then you're not doing your duty as a doctor.
Well, yeah,
you
could always be like,
always do no,
well, like
harm.
someone could come along later that's in a worse condition, so we never give it to anyone. It's like, well, you know.
Yeah, so essentially, do you say like, your condition isn't bad enough to give this to you because there are definitely cases out there that are worse. And if somebody out there that is worse comes in.
No, hospitals would give it to you regardless. Hospitals, as long as you show up and you're there and you're in the condition that at the point where it like a respirator is justified, you'll get it. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Like it's not like a, as long as they're in supply, of course.
But yeah. They probably over time do shift their definition of when one is necessary and when one's not.
That's the tricky part.
So I don't know.
I'm still wondering about like from the public's point of view, like if you, I guess, didn't come in fast enough because you were warned that unless you have major symptoms or whatever, don't come in. Mm-hmm. Well, then you're like, okay, well, I'm not going to go in. And then turns out you have like, you're like in the late stages of it and you're about to die. You come in and they're like, oh, we just gave it to the last guy who's in a similar situation.
You should have come in earlier. Like, that's the way that they would view it, is be like,
well, but imagine two people are at the same point and they're in their own homes and they're trying to decide, should I come in or not? One is like, oh, I have symptoms and I'm worried about this. You know, I can't let my children not have a father. Then they go in. And then the other one says, no, I must for the betterment of all of society, wait until I know that these symptoms are more severe so that I don't overwhelm the hospital. Aren't they doing in a way exactly what we've told them? Isn't the first one jumping the gun a bit? Kind of get where it's like,
because you're essentially sacrificing yourself for the betterment of society,
or at least your well-being. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is I mean, it's a honorable act, but like, I'm not saying it's like morally justified to not give them it if they come in. I'm just saying that it's like, they wouldn't do that, if that makes sense. Because you made the decision to stay home until your condition got a lot worse.
I think Marcus's, your situation also points to, like, even outside of the coronavirus, just in general, which populations are more likely to wait to come in to the hospital. Yeah. And that ends up being the most vulnerable populations, whether it's people with who don't have financial resources, or minorities and stuff like that. Those generally are the ones that aren't rushing into a hospital. So in the end, yeah.
Especially in the States.
So yeah. I'm sure that can also be reflected
and
here.
And I think, and I think that's like, as hospitals, how do you, because I feel like that's kind of upon the hospitals to fix that problem, you know, because it's how they've been portrayed in those communities that is, that's the reason why those communities aren't as trusting.
If our government stepped in to make healthcare more affordable and, you know, so that you aren't having to pay as much, isn't that one of the most effective ways to keep someone out, to say you're going to have to pay? Well,
all right, let's
our
move
final
on to
one
the next
is
one.
About the economy and what it means for us to shut it down and how that will impact everything. So we're going into, across the country, this severe sort of lockdown, shelter in place, safer at home quarantine situation. But that's also causing huge problems for our economy overall. People are losing their jobs. Money isn't flowing. Loans are becoming harder and harder to get. So will that in the end cause more problems than just sort of having a half, a moderate approach to quarantining and stuff like that? So what do we all think? And Ian, I want to hear from you on this one.
So
was I supposed to be listening?
Oh, wait, before a couple things on the economy, I'd like to say real quick, Colombia's CEO has agreed to take just like a $10,000 wage, $10,000 a year, so that he can give like the majority of it to his employees, so that they can like still afford to live while they're not working, which is awesome, you know?
Yeah,
it's a really cool step. I mean, because it's not like he was just like, you know what, I'm going to give, just like a tenth of it. I mean, that's $10,000 a year. That's nothing, right? Which is, I'm glad, because Colombia is a company that I've always supported.
Are you talking about the jacket?
I'm really happy about that. Did you think I was talking about Colombia, like the country?
But it makes sense since, like, like, I get that you support Colombia because you never take off that Colombia jacket. I don't know when the last time you washed it. Because I never see you.
I wash it every 2 weeks.
I never see you without it on. So,
do you see it
at home on weekends,
like,
Ian?
You wear it, like, even when you sleep, you take it into the shower with you. You're just 24/7.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, you've caught me.
What's actually happening is that whenever Luke washes it, he just doesn't have any clothes, and so he just walks around.
I actually wash it in the shower when I wear it, which is every night. So. It's actually been like an odyssey trying to like figure out how to like dress myself without ever taking the Columbia off. Impressive. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think Ian, I think this has just come to you're just spying on the wrong households.
He's like, guys, my telescope is pretty good. I can see Luke from here. I didn't actually take it off whenever we went on our backpacking trip. It stayed on like the majority of the time because it was so
actually,
cold.
Yeah, that is disgusting.
I couldn't take it off. I couldn't. I mean, I'd change shirts, and then I'd put the Columbia back on.
Yeah. Okay, whatever. You know, let's not so disgusting at each other after we all went on that trip. We were all disgusted.
Yeah. All right, are we going back to politics where I'm not going to talk at all?
Thank you for your input, Ian. We really enjoyed this little interlude.
I'll see you guys in 10 minutes.
Stop.
Oh, wait, one more fun thing. Do you know how they got the number, like the 1200 number, I think?
Oh, is it?
For what?
It's the minimum wage times 40 for a month.
Oh, so 40-hour work week.
All right.
40-hour and 725, yeah. So if you ever believe that, like, it's going to be a struggle, like surviving on just $1,200, then just remember that next time, like minimum wage.
And this is also, they're giving us a one-time payment.
Yeah. Yeah, this is one. Yeah, make it work.
Okay, so real quick about the whole economy thing. So I'm reading here on the New York Times that it says President Trump announced more strict rules about, like, staying at home and stuff like that. And it says that that announcement came after two of the top doctors advising him warned that as many as 200,000 people in America could die during the outbreak. So essentially the argument is, are those 200,000 lives, is that worth destroying the, like what is the damage that does to, like, to the economy and to the American society as a whole? What does that, how many, like, so if we lose that many people during the outbreak because we don't have strict regulations on staying at home and stuff like that, how bad is those 200,000 people dying compared to?
Well, first we have to value
how many
the
people
effects
could die to destroying the economy.
Yeah, like let's make a scenario of like the extent of the damage to the economy.
Yeah.
Okay. We have to develop that first before we can ever put any value on, like, how much it weighs.
So let's say the value of no quarantine is 200,000 lives. Then what is the value of yes quarantine?
Well, let's, like, make a prediction.
How many people aren't getting paid? How does that affect the lives?
What's the extent of the damage?
The most important thing for us to note is that we can't know that. We must make predictions, and then we also have to just consider if our predictions are wrong, and then we've killed 200,000 people. Are we willing to live with that? I don't know. In a way, we know that if the economy, the way it's going, people are going to have a less wonderful lifestyle. Our quality of living overall in the United States will go down. More people will die because of access to healthcare, inability to pay for all sorts of expenses.
Which is already
children will be getting less of an education. They'll be getting less nutritious food. There are countless issues, and we don't even know. I mean, things like this have impact for decades and decades.
I mean, like 12,000 people died.
So now you have people without access to food. Yeah. You have just like what will a slowdown overall on the economy do in terms of our ability to put social nets up in the future for people who are, you know, at risk. I don't know. My problem is that we have to make decisions. I don't know. I kind of look to an innocence in making a decision as like something to value. Right now, we know more effectively that people die directly because of coronavirus, and not putting measures in effect will lead to more deaths. We can't quite as much measure the future impacts of the economy being bad. And we know that those impacts aren't just due to the coronavirus, but also because of the way systems work in our world. Because of the way we've designed things like healthcare and food distribution and all of those things. So in a way, if I say we can't think about that long term yet, we have to value these lives here and now, you can blame some other thing larger than yourself for the deaths that it will cause or the harm it will do. But in the short term, you can only blame yourself. We can only blame ourselves for not putting quarantine measures into effect. And I don't know if you can be willing to say, oh, we're just going to let people die.
I will say in terms of the economy, a lot of people have been comparing this sort of recession to the recession after 9/11, where there was kind of like there's obviously the attacks and the effects afterwards. It kind of deepened the 2001 recession. However, this is slightly different, where instead of it being kind of people are scared to do stuff, instead of it the recession being caused by fear, this is caused by an actual danger to our livelihood. So I feel like a lot of economists are using that scenario as like evidence, or kind of evidence to back up certain claims, kind of saying this is similar to what we've dealt with in the past. However, this is also a lot more serious to what we dealt with, where it wasn't now, instead of it being a fear of investing in the economy, we literally cannot invest in the economy.
Well, the thing is, most people are going to make the decision to save lives now than to prevent future damage, just because we know, like Nate said, we know the effects of it now, right? Like we can a lot more accurately estimate what's going to happen if we don't go into full quarantine, versus us being like, well, you know, if we go into full quarantine, then like certain aspects of the economy will be destroyed. Then we have to like elaborate on like, you know, a lot of stuff. And it's more like, well, we'll try and figure out what's best for now.
I also think that a large portion of like the people that are making those decisions, the impact won't be as devastating to them because they are in positions of power and privilege, which typically comes with money. And so like, sure, they might lose quite a bit of money, but they still will be able to survive, versus those who aren't making those decisions.
It's kind of like climate change a little bit, you know, effects that won't be felt now.
Yeah.
So it's like, why would we do anything about it now?
Yeah.
But, well,
I guess that kind of segues to some more recent news in our local area, where our local government has essentially said that there are only a specific amount of scenarios that you can go outside for. So I'm going to go and read them off. So you can only go outside to go to the grocery store, convenience, or warehouse store, to go to the pharmacy to pick up medications and other healthcare necessities, go to medical appointments, go to restaurants for takeout, delivery, or drive-through, care or support for a friend or family member, take a walk, ride your bike, hike, jog, and be in nature for exercise. Just keep at least 6 feet between you and others in the community. Walk your pets and take them to the vet if necessary. Help someone get necessary supplies for their health and well-being, or work under the essential guidelines provided by the state of Oklahoma. So even though we still had some liberties before, as of
yesterday. Let's be honest, these are pretty liberal, though.
Yeah, but like, technically, if we go exactly by this, I can't be riding my skateboard anymore, like my electric skateboard. Because it says I can walk, ride my bike, hike, jog, or be in nature for exercise. That does not really require exercise. I do not sweat when I'm doing that. It is actually... it is purely pleasure.
No, well,
Marcos, we all know really, that you can like, still do that.
Yes.
I know, but I'm just saying that there's now starting to create more limitations to what we can do.
It's still pretty lax compared to like what a lot of other states and a lot of other countries in general have been doing, which is like, you're staying in your house, and if you go out, we'll arrest you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's...
versus here where it's like, you know, hey, try to stay in your house if you can, please. You know,
yeah.
So, plus, I remember there's somewhere on there that's like you can call like the non-emergency hotline to like report someone who's not like working within the standards of it, and you're either going to be filed like a citation or just like a warning or something. Which I wonder, like, who's going to call? I mean, I guess the only time
also you would ever call is
if like a neighborhood party or something is going on. I guess, which obviously in that case it's probably best to call. You know, but. At the same point, who are you going to call it on? Like,
well, I mean, a family like, can walking walk outside. That's not a problem.
Like, probably no.
Yeah, but
like
but that was just an example.
Yeah, well, like a family that's or it doesn't look like a family. My just problem, like a group of friends.
The thing is that in apart, a way, right?
Yeah.
Like if we do not call, if we're not willing to actually go through with what we're doing, then we're allowing. Nate, and I yet no snitch, you could Nate. Actually cause someone's death by not doing it. Yeah.
Wait, yeah. Cause though.
Well,
that well,
I mean,
no,
yeah, like
no.
The spread. If you're spreading the virus, then
I don't think it's fair to say that if I don't report someone for not like complying with
I mean,
the
obviously
quarantine,
they're responsible, but
I don't think
I,
that's fair.
I think it's very reasonable to say you didn't.
I owe it to do my part, which is to keep myself
that's an easy
and
way out.
My family members and. But I don't think that I owe it to like I don't if I don't make the call then I'm not responsible for like the spread of it if that makes sense.
I think that you are responsible for
ensuring that you know what I'm saying.
You know, when you're talking to people, you're emphasizing how important it is to go through with it. I think that if there's a party in your neighborhood and people are coming in and friends hanging out, and you don't call when you know you can and you know that it would probably be good to do that. That you are in some way responsible.
Okay, yes, I would call, but I'm not saying that if I didn't call, I don't think that it's my fault.
I don't know, it's kind of the situation of like if you see somebody getting bullied, do you
or even more extreme,
do something about
it? If you
it?
See someone literally hurting
and
someone,
if you don't,
I think
well, then
that
you're
I think that obviously
so.
you owe it to them morally to do it, but I don't think you can be blamed for it. If you didn't do anything.
Okay, well,
you know what I'm saying? Like,
blamed in one way and not like blamed.
We owe it. Yes, we owe it. That's what I'm saying. It's like we owe it collectively to stop the spread. And whether that's supporting people who aren't complying with the quarantine, which, yes, I would say you owe it to like society morally to help to not, you know, further the spread of it. But like if you don't, I don't believe.
But I mean, we
like,
all recognize like the importance of when we see a crime happening, you call the police. And
yes, you are indirectly.
I mean, the way that our enforcement mechanisms work is everyone.
But like, crime is kind of different, though. Crime is different. That's like more like you're putting. You could potentially.
Okay, but I mean, no. If you see something that, you know, I mean, I get that, but imagine. I mean, you are putting yourself at risk also, actually. I think the spread of the disease through our community does put
okay,
you
but
at
like,
risk.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just saying that, like, let's see, like, a crime, like, trying to get involved and try and...
Well, in both scenarios, just like you're just calling...
Probably different. Well, let's...
Or whatever. But
it's,
like,
it's a different thing to involve yourself in it.
I think that, like, I mean, it will be in a case-by-case scenario, and you're going to just have to make the decision yourself. But I do think... Imagine if you could see just visually like the spread of the disease and the possibility that those people are giving the disease to themselves and they're going to go home, give it to their families, and someone dies. Like if you're able to see those possibilities visually, I think that we'd all be a bit more willing to call and to shout out to them that they need to stop, you know. In a way, disease is weird because people do get, like, there are real impacts, but it's so invisible compared to, like, a direct crime happening or some danger or, you know.
Well, yeah, the effects of it are, like, a lot, like, not as well known, you know what I'm saying? Like, a group of individuals hanging out, we don't know if they have the virus. They potentially they could,
you
right?
Know the
but versus, like, a crime happening where it's like, yeah, the effects are, like, right there. Yes, I can see that this person is being harmed. I'm definitely going to stop, right? You know, so.
Yeah, but the question is, I guess another thing we can derive from this is, will this ever end up becoming a crime? Like, will this eventually be like, all right, if you don't, like, if you
it is a crime in a lot of countries.
I know, but like, comply. do you think in our country,
I mean, I think it
think
is in a way.
This will ever become a crime?
Probably in some states. It is, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Well, you can already receive citations for not complying with it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's going to get more strict in Oklahoma. I don't know how far it's going to go. I don't know what's happening
in
OKC
what we
right
did.
Now,
yeah.
In Oklahoma City.
It's essentially the same. Yeah. It's
they
literally
did.
Like.
Is it. Did Stitt. Did Governor Stitt do it? Or was it
mayor.
By the mayor of
yeah.
Oklahoma City?
The governor hasn't done anything radically different.
Okay. So.
He's like
Stitt
a mirror of Trump.
But the two major cities that house like over 60%
they're the ones leading the way. Our governor
have actually done stuff about it.
Yeah.
So it's you know, Oklahoma is still being called out a lot for like not actively doing stuff with the other states, but we have to keep in mind that, you know, the cities and municipalities have been taking measures to prevent this. Tulsa's been doing it for a while now versus you know, OKC, which is just kind of not jumping on it still. But
I don't know, also, to move on. Like, I will say Oklahoma isn't as big as of like, it's not like currently, I don't think it's as big as of a threat versus like other states because we're not as densely populated. Like a lot of our population is kind of spread out over the entire state. And so it's not like California or something where it's like, if you don't do something,
I mean, but we're basically what experts are saying are that we're just behind on the curve. Like we're just at an earlier stage still, and we can still expect us to get to a higher point.
Well, yeah. Well, the thing is, we may not be like an international city, you know, or at risk for receiving like international people, but still Tulsa and OKC have decent population densities as cities, you know?
Yeah.
So they're still at risk.
Possibly a good thing is that like we might not have been as strict, but we're putting in measures in place that possibly others didn't put in place at the point we were at, you know, if that makes sense. So we, in some ways, maybe we're still doing more good with our policies in terms of a future impact of slowing the spread and everything like that. Okay. Our time is kind of, we've been talking for a while.
Yeah.
Any last remarks by everyone, Ian? We need to chime in to bring us all together.
Oh, I just woke up. Sorry. Once I heard the word economics, I was out cold.
So disappointing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd like to give a shout out real quick.
Okay.
Before we end it, Marcos, you mentioned that about 50% of our viewers are from Texas, which I don't know if that's accurate at all.
Which is listening only like five to it listeners, right? In Texas.
So, our Texan brothers and sisters.
Yeah, it's essentially like
if you are listening to this,
yeah, there's five Texans and five Tulsans.
Thank you, Texas. Yep. Thank you.
All right, cool. That's it.
All right, cool. I'm now getting a call to Tennessee. Goodbye.
The creepiest.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you'd like to listen to more episodes, you can find us on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter @apart_6. Lastly, thank you to Ian, Luke, and Nate for co-hosting this podcast. Special thank you to Ian for editing this episode, and thanks to you for listening to this episode. And remember to always stay 6 feet apart. I'll see you next time.